Hello there, this is Carrie Rabideau, Extension Educator with the University of Minnesota Extension Center for Youth Development. Thank you for listening in on this podcast as we discuss relationships, role models, and rural LGBT youth. I'm here with Joe Rand, Extension Educator. Thank you for joining me today, Joe.
It's great to be here, Carrie.
Joe contributed to episode 12, which was for LGBT youth, safe spaces can be hard to find. And this podcast really will continue that conversation. I'm so glad you were able to join me again to get a little deeper into the research that you are doing. And we also get to hear from some clips from the young people who you have interviewed as well. So Joel, I'll have you introduce yourself again and have you catch us up on your work in this area.
Well, thanks, Carrie. So I work for the Center for Youth Development, and I work in St. Cloud, Minnesota, which is a relatively rural community, but I live in Becker, Minnesota, which is about 20 minutes away from St. Cloud. And in addition to my work in youth development, I also volunteer some time at Becker High School with the Becker High School GSA. A GSA has been called a Gay Straight Alliance for a long time, and is now sometimes referred to as a Gender and Sexuality Alliance, but essentially it's a group of students who get together and support one another with regard to their identities. So I'm here today to talk about a little bit about a project that I've been working on for many years that started when I was in grad school, and that was really just sort of diving into what it means to grow up as an LGBT youth in a rural environment. And so today what I'll talk a little bit about is that history of my work, why it's important and relevant, what I'm doing currently, and what that means for the future. While I was in grad school, I conducted a series of interviews with gay men who grew up in rural Minnesota. They were ages 18 to 70. I didn't put any parameters around what rural meant. As long as they felt like they grew up rural, we went with it. And basically was just to let them tell their story and to find out what their experience was like growing up in rural Minnesota throughout time. Because like I said, ages 18 to 70. What was interesting was that all 10 indicated that they didn't have any access to supportive resources regarding sexuality in their rural environment. All 10 indicated that their only connection to a gay role model or ideas about what it meant to be gay was via what was depicted on television or in pop culture. Anecdotally, one of the things that's really interesting to me is that all 10 of them referenced the TV show Will and Grace and how revolutionary that was and how important it was for them because it normalized what it meant to be gay. And all 10 of them indicated that having a peer-to-peer support group like a GSA would have been extremely beneficial to them during their adolescent development. So that's sort of what's been the impetus for this ongoing research for me, is to find out what it is about that environment, what it is about that peer-to-peer support group that is effective and that works. And so that's what I've been trying to figure out. So why is it important for us? Well, there's a lot of research out there. There have been a lot of studies produced that talk about the negative impacts on especially those marginalized youth who are part of the LGBT community and how detrimental it can be to their mental health, their social well-being, and whether or not they're able to learn in a school setting based on how safe they feel, based on how supported they feel. And specifically with rural youth, the lack of accesses to resources. And so some of that information you can find through the Human Rights Campaign. So just a few for you, for your information that I think are important. 4 in 10 LGBT youth say that the community in which they live is not accepting of LGBT people. 68% say they hear negative messages about being LGBT from elected leaders. 92% of LGBT youth say they hear negative messages about being LGBT. And the top sources of those messages are the internet, school, and their peers. Over 3/4 of LGBT youth say they know things will get better. And 26% of LGBT youth say that their biggest problems are not feeling accepted by their family, trouble at school and bullying, and a fear of being out or open. 22% of non-LGBT youth say their biggest problems are trouble with class, exams, and grades. And so you can see the difference there between the LGBT youth and the non-LGBT youth. So that's all information from the Human Rights Campaign, and you can find that on their website. There's also an organization I like to reference called GLSEN, and that is G-L-S-E-N, and that stands for the Gay and Lesbian Straight Education Network. And every couple of years, they do a school climate survey across the United States. And so they survey students in a variety of schools. And you can look up that report for your state. In Minnesota, there were 205 respondents in 2015. Here's some of that information with regard to Minnesota. The majority, over 80% of LGBT students in Minnesota, regularly heard anti-LGBT remarks. 14% also heard these remarks from staff in school. Most LGBT students have been victimized at school, and only just over half had reported it to staff. And of those, only 34% indicated it resulted in effective intervention. The CDC indicates that students who experience bullying are at greater risk for poor school adjustment, sleep difficulties, anxiety, and depression. A study in the American Journal for Public Health indicated that students who experience bias-based bullying, and in this case based on their gender identity, also could be based on their race or ethnicity, are at greater risk for health problems. I think it's also important to point out that the Southern Poverty Law Center Teaching Tolerance Project recently surveyed more than 10,000 teachers, counselors, and administrators, and found that bullying is on the rise in schools in the last year.
Okay, Joe, so let's move into your work, your research in Becker, Minnesota, and what you have found out.
Sure. Becker, Minnesota, like I said, is about 20 minutes south of St. Cloud. And I'll just give you some demographics and some information here to give you a little picture of what Becker looks like. Becker's population is about 4,500 people. 96% of those are white. The median income is about $70,000. A year, and the poverty rate is at 1.8%. The 2010 census showed that 10% of voters were Democratic, 46% were independent, and 42% were Republican. Specific to Becker High School, there are 871 students in grades 9 through 12. 94% of them are white. It has a graduation rate of 96%, and it ranks at 138 of 333 on the safest school districts in Minnesota. So one could say that we are the perfect quintessential small town Minnesota.
Yeah, sounds very safe. Lots of resources.
It does sound safe, and like there's lots of resources. And for those kids who are different, it's not always the safest place, and there aren't always access to resources. And so that's why it's really important for these kids to have a support group, a peer-to-peer support group like the GSA at the high school. So for the last few years, I have been a supporter and ally to the GSA at Becker High School. And I work with the students at the high school in a variety of ways, not just through the GSA, but I also direct the musical at the high school, and I am an assistant speech coach. So I have a direct line to the kids in a variety of ways. When I found out that there was a GSA, I knew that it was something that I needed to be involved in and wanted to be a supporter of and try to be an ally, a role model, an advocate, all those things to these kids. And find out what it was about the GSA that worked for them, why they felt like that was a space that they both needed and felt like it was worthwhile to keep coming. So recently, I decided it was time to find out why, and I decided just to do some basic qualitative research and interview kids and find out what it was about the GSA that worked for them, why they kept going or didn't keep going. But also to find out what it was like or what it is like for them to grow up in a rural town in Minnesota. So when conducting interviews, there are really two main questions I was trying to answer. Number one is, what experiences do LGBT youth growing up in Becker have that impact their self-discovery and development of gender identity and sexual identity? So really what it's like to grow up in Becker. Mm-hmm. And number two, what are the impacts of the participation in the GSA for those students who are participating? At this point in time, I've conducted 9 interviews. Most of them have been about an hour long, and I let kids talk, even though I give them a series of questions and points to make sure that we hit. I really want to let kids talk about what their experience is like so that we can get to the meat and really find out who they are and what their experience has been. It's important to note that so far, of the participants, 2 have identified as trans, 2 as bisexual, 1 as asexual, and 1 as gay. And that's just of those who divulged that information and felt comfortable to share that.
Joe, as you've done these interviews, do you have some overall messages that you have that you could share with us?
Yep, absolutely. All the youth indicated that they've had some sort of depression or anxiety to varying degrees. One of them indicated that they had engaged in self-harm because of the effect harassment had on their self-esteem and self-worth, and that harassment specifically because they're part of the LGBT community. One youth indicated they talked to a mental health specialist. All of them indicated they had been harassed to some degree at school. One youth indicated they feared riding the bus because of previous harassment on the way to and from school. Many youth indicated they felt supported by teachers, staff, and administration at times, but had faced adversity as well. And finally, I think it's important to note that students indicated that they felt like the GSA is a safe space where they can be themselves and ask questions, develop supportive relationships, and create change. And I think also it's important to know that when students talked about their time spent in the GSA together, they had a physical reaction while they were talking, and they were smiling and they were laughing and they looked happy. And you could tell it was a place where they felt at home and like they could be themselves authentically. And we know our kids need that at school, or they aren't able to learn. If they can't authentically present themselves, we're not meeting their social and emotional learning needs at its most basic level. And that's why that feeling of a safe space is so important for them.
So your research question, is a GSA effective, was answered for you.
Yeah, absolutely. It's very effective. And it's important to know that one of the kids I talked to felt like it was effective, but is no longer participating because it wasn't meeting her needs. She wanted more knowledge. She was already in a place where she felt supported by her family. She didn't need the peer support. She wanted more history, knowledge, things of that nature. And so she affirmed the fact that it was a helpful place, but a place that she no longer felt like she belonged, which I thought was interesting.
And you have the other examples from the people that you interviewed. So at this time, we'll mention that you did get permission from the young people to share their quotes. We're not going to share any names. You have some examples for us that we can hear from their mouths of what the GSA has meant to them and meant to their feeling safe at school. Mm-hmm. Could you share some of those with us?
Yeah, absolutely. So the first youth is a young man who identified as asexual and talked for 2 hours because he is very passionate about the GSA and about promoting the community and making sure that people have access to resources. He's very passionate about creating change in order to make that happen. He will probably be a politician someday and be advocating for a marginalized group of people. And that's a lot of what he talked about, was those skills and that he's gained through the GSA, the confidence that he has gained, and how important that is to him.
And I know that if I end up making a decision and it doesn't go right, I'm gonna have everyone there still supporting me. And that's something that I'm definitely thankful for being part of and having that community. And also, in a way, it kind of gives you like a leadership role because you're part of the GSA, and a lot of students in Becker don't know what that's about. Like, they don't know about the LGBT community yet. They're still in this whole like mindset, it's like black and white. And so when I have actually had a lot more students in my grade, in older grade, like kids older asking me about this stuff, and younger asking me, well, what is it, like, what's the GSA, and, like, can you tell me a bit about the LGBT community? And that's something that I honestly never thought I'd be answering or never been asked. And it's interesting, like, seeing how they also, like, now understand more and seeing how they have, like, developed with this more knowledge. Like, I've had kids who I never thought would ask me it. Like, I've had kids who, I mean, I was bullied for a little bit, but I've had kids who bullied me at one point, and they actually came up to ask me about the LGBT community and what it actually means, and what it means being, because it's still something new to my school for an asexual being there. I've had a few people, like, not at the school, but in the public, like, tell me, like, well, so what's wrong with you? Like, and I've had that whole annoying thing that happens. But it's one of those things that, like, at the school, because it's new, instead of acting out in, like, anger and, like, everything, they're willing to be more open about it. And I feel like that's partially because the GSA is more public there. They know that there's LGBT students there in their school, and so they're willing to be more, like cooperative and learning about it because they want to know more about their student body.
Another youth that I spoke to identifies as trans and now uses he and him pronouns. And I'll note that even I sometimes screw up pronouns. And I think it's important for all of us to recognize that it's important to ask people what their preferred pronouns are. And it's okay to screw up and recognize that you screw up if you use the wrong pronoun and to move on. So if I screw up, I apologize. This trans student is the one who indicated that he does not feel safe on the bus. He also indicated that he does not use the restroom all day at school because he does not feel like it's a safe place.
First of all, you walk in and there's a bunch of smiling, you know, faces. It's a happy little group where accepting of each other. It's more of a don't ask, don't tell. So if you're not willing to express anything, you know, you don't have to, you're not forced to. But, I mean, I was immediately, like, everybody changed the name to what I wanted, you know.
What's the bathroom situation here like at the high school?
I don't go to the bathroom here. I hold it the whole day. Until I get home, because, you know, I get home and I go to my bathroom and down by my room. I don't, if I'm out in, like, before I leave, I, you know, I do the little kid thing and I try just before I leave because I know I don't want to be stuck in this situation.
Because here you would have to use...
I would be...
You'd have to use the female bathroom? Mm-hmm. And there's no other option
mm-hmm.
here.
There's no unisex bathrooms here.
What about locker rooms? What's
gym. I'm happy I don't have gym this year because I don't have to go through that. But last year, I actually, I dreaded it every day. I had to.
Because you had to use the female locker room?
Yeah, I had to use the female. I didn't, like, dress right in front of everybody else, you know, like everybody else does. I actually locked myself in a stall, and I would be, sometimes I even waited till everybody left, and then I went in and went in the stall and changed and came out after everybody. I was counted late so many times for that class just because I didn't want to be seen coming in or out of that room, you know.
Another youth that I spoke to indicated that she initially joined the GSA because she had friends in the GSA and wanted to be supportive of them, and then along the way realized that she herself was part of the LGBT community.
I got involved with GSA and Becker to help support the students who I kind of had an idea they were not getting the support by their parents. Some of my friends were identifying as gay or transitioning into a different gender. and I felt that they deserved some form of support. So I heard about GSA in sophomore year and decided to attempt to go to the meetings. At first, it was a little weird because I didn't think if I was in any way supposed to be there, because I wasn't sure if I was gay or straight or bi. So I kind of just wanted to support them at first, and then it kind of struck me, maybe I am one of the people that should be there, because I still am kind of confused with myself. And I just kind of thought it was a really good idea to support people who didn't get the home support, since the community is pretty religious, and both parents should at least be a little more accepting of their children's choices.
Finally, the last student that I'll reference is a former GSA member who graduated 2 years ago and is now in college. She was a youth that several of the other GSA members referenced and talked about how important she was and the work that she did while she was part of the GSA. And she had to work through some really hard stuff when she was leading the group, including being harassed at school.
You know, living in a small town, being yourself is such a hard thing. And like, you know, it's incredibly difficult to not be who you are, but it's also incredibly difficult to be who you are in a place where they judge you constantly. I was never super comfortable with who I am. Like, and I'm still not. Like it takes a lot of courage to, you know, do that. And I've grown a lot, but it can be incredibly hard. So in Becker, like where, like I said, it's a small town, there's a lot of judgment and a lot of hate that comes, but not to your face. It comes kind of from behind, you know, from the little stickers to like, you know, throwing a gay pride sticker on your locker and then like coloring it out. Yeah, that's a thing. You know, I had someone write faggot on the back of my car, and like, you know, it's like, it was incredibly traumatizing to have to endure like that kind of abuse from people who you should be friends with and who you considered your friend up until then. And so like, it was very hard for the time that I was still in the closet, that like I was severely depressed, I was suicidal, I was anxious, I was all of the things that you can categorize with all types of queer people, where because of the harassment, because of the bullying that you're enduring, you just kind of become that evil dark side that quivers behind every look.
So what does all of this mean, and why is it important, and what do we do now, I guess, is where we're at. Mm-hmm. And so I would just offer a few things and realize that I don't have all the answers. And one strategy is a GSA, but there's a lot of work to be done for these kids to make sure that they feel safe and feel normal. So the first thing I recognized is that there's this institutionalized oppression that exists, and probably exists more than just at Becker High School. Part of that institutionalized oppression comes from 8 states having laws that restrict teachers and staff from talking about LGBT issues at school. And only 19 states and Washington, D.C. have laws prohibiting bullying students based on their gender identity and sexual orientation. So we have both a lack of laws supporting these kids and laws preventing teachers, staff, administrators from intervening. Another challenge that we're facing is this sort of normalization of homophobia, and that we recognize that it exists and we become apathetic about it and we don't combat it. And what made me realize that were the comments from the youth that continued to say, someone else has it worse than me. It's okay that I had to deal with what I have to deal with because somebody else has it worse off. a few years ago, there was a campaign called the It Gets Better campaign, where advocates would give their stories and tell kids it gets better. And there are videos on YouTube. And I know that that campaign did a lot of good and was great for a lot of people. And saying it gets better isn't enough. And it's, to me, it's not okay that a kid feels like that's all there is and that we're not going to make it better. Because it can't just be that it's going to get better. Mm-hmm. It needs to be better for them now.
And so you have some ideas for schools so that it can be better.
Yeah, so I think, you know, making sure that schools, administration, staff are supportive of GSAs that want to exist and welcome those peer-to-peer support groups for these kids, because we know how beneficial they can be for those kids. We need to increase training for youth development professionals, including school staff, school administrators. More inclusive policies are really going to be effective. One of the ways Minnesota has done that is by creating a new trans toolkit that schools are able to use and implement in their settings. And I think, finally, just continuing to educate people through telling our stories and letting people tell their stories, listening to them, and getting a feel for walking in their shoes. The last thing I want to point out that is really pretty astounding to me is the resiliency of these kids who continually face harassment, oppression, etc. They continue to try and fight to make this GSA an official club at the school. I don't think it's unique to Becker, Minnesota, and this is just my context. This is where I work and live, and it's what I know, and I'm just sharing what I know. I hope that it doesn't give anyone the impression that it's a bad place. There are staff who are incredible advocates for youth across the board, in addition to our marginalized LGBT youth and other diverse populations. There are administrators who are doing great work to try and make things safer, to try and advocate for inclusive policies, to try and make sure that every kid in Becker feels safe at school and has the same opportunity to learn. And so know that while some of this other stuff, yucky stuff, goes on, there are a lot of supportive people. There are a lot of advocates. And we are working to be better so that things are better.
What I'm also hearing today is that they have you helping them have a platform for getting their story out. You talked about sharing the story and your willingness to sit down with them, talk to them, to be an ally, to help teach all of us and to answer our questions and to help us understand means a lot as well. So I really appreciate you doing this podcast with me today, Joe.
Absolutely. Thank you so much, Carrie. I think it's an important topic that we all think about, and I appreciate all of you that are listening.
And we will need to bring this podcast to a close. I'd like to direct you all to our website at www.extension.umn.edu/youth. There you will find information on working with youth during out-of-school time, other research, training, and events that we offer. And I also encourage you to check out our Minnesota 4-H program. You can keep this conversation going by checking out our Youth Development Insight blog and looking up Joe's blogs. I know he would enjoy continuing the conversation, answering any questions that you have on there as well. So this is Carrie Robidoux with Joe Rand from the University of Minnesota Extension Center for Youth Development. Please tune in again soon.